My name is Tom Christensen. I teach at the Lutheran Bible Institute in Issaquah, just this side of Seattle. Been there just 1 year. Prior to that time, my wife and I and our three children spent 16 years in Cameroon in West Africa.
Oh, good.
I put a kind of a map on the board. Not very accurate, but to give you a clue where Cameroon and the Central African Republic are located. There we served as ALC missionaries. I was a pastor and teacher in those two countries. And I worked especially with the Gbaya people. I put that in big letters on top of our board. The Gbaya people number around 500,000, somewhere between 500,000 and 1 million, depending on how you cut it, how you cut the various clans. There are a number of dialects involved in that number. Yes, sir.
My nephew, Rodney Denberg.
I know the name.
Do you know him?
I believe we've met, yes.
Well, for goodness sake.
We must be cousins or something. He works farther north with the Lutheran Brethren, as I recall.
Yes, with the Lutheran Brethren.
And we worked with ALC.
Well, this is interesting for me. I'm glad I come.
What I've been talking about last week, actually this is the sixth session, although I've had a different topic every day. I've called this series Foreshadowings of the Gospel. And the subtopic, Leaves for the Healing of the Nations. What you've gotten yourself into this afternoon by sitting in this circle is some ritual description today of initiation ritual among the Gbaya people, which I'm calling Leaves for Undergoing Initiation for a New Way of Life, because that's how the Gbaya understand this phenomenon of initiation. It's about a new way of life. Last night we heard a wonderful homily. There were a lot of memorable things said in Dan's sermon last night. One that I recall is he said that Jesus feasted on Isaiah. That one struck me. As Christians, we feast on the Word as the bread of life. And I believe that very, very deeply. But I also ask myself why these last 5 to 10 years of my own life, especially, why have I feasted on some stories told to me by the Gbaya people with whom I have been at work. As we have looked at the gospel stories, we've also looked at some stories out of their own tradition. And I, coming from a Western tradition, from the United States, confess that I have, in fact, feasted on many of these stories. And I ask myself, well, why is that? What is there in these Gbaya stories, in this case, stories, descriptions about ritual practices? Well, for example, in these ritual practices, among the Gbaya people, we meet over and over and over again a particular tree. It's a tree of life in the midst of the Gbaya people. The name of that tree I put on the board here, Sore. If you just spell it S-O-R-E, it looks like another word. But they pronounce it Sore in two syllables. And they also call that tree, metaphorically, they name it Sore Gamo, which means Sore, cool thing. When they see that tree, they will use the metaphor to name it. You start asking questions of what kind of a tree is this after all? And one question you ask is about physical properties of the tree. It happens to be the most common, ordinary little tree growing in the savanna grasslands in that West African grassland area. Not only is it common, but it is a soft little bush of a tree. Not a hardwood like many of the enormous hardwood trees in the Gallery Forest, but a soft and a fibrous wood. But it's amazing that every year as the Gbaya burn off the bush in order to go hunting, and that tree too is burned off, it always springs right up again from charred stumps. It's very resilient. It has an edible fruit loved by Gbaya children. It's very messy to eat, but loved by the Gbaya children who wander in the bush. One curious thing about it, and which is very much related to ritual meanings, is that there is a slippery substance between the bark and that fibrous wood. The Gbaya say that bad things or dangerous things slip right off the sori. So that slipperiness is related to cooling things, because bad things slip right off it in dangerous or hot situations. It brings coolness. It brings peace. It's a peace bringer. Two Gbaya people may be fighting, and a third may take a branch from that tree and throw it between the adversaries to cool the fight. Whoever jumps over the branch risks death, risks the consequences. When things get messed up in a village, there are quarrels and sickness and death. The chief's nephew may come dragging a long vine through the village, and everyone will throw little spears symbolizing their sins onto that vine, and then they will drag that vine out and put it at the foot of a sori tree. Or to establish a new village, if witchcraft, for example, has messed up the village to such an extent that they just must change the site of the village, then they will go find a new village site around a sori tree and establish a new center, sori tree as new center of the village. Or again, if there are problems between people, the chief has cursed people in the village, then he may gather, finally, when they show him the consequences of that curse, that everybody is sick, there's quarreling going on, the fields are not producing, nobody's having luck on the hunt, where there are hard words, similar to some ideas we find in the Old Testament, by the way, where there is no justice between people, there is no peace. And so they may gather with a stick, a stirring stick, around cool water and sori leaves, and as the chief confesses his sins, they will pound those sori leaves, and then they will be anointed with those leaves. On and on, dozens and dozens of examples. We've talked about rites of reconciliation, rites of purification in the past sessions. And today, I'd like to talk about initiation. I think there are trees of life planted by God in every culture. To pick up on an image from the Old Testament, from Genesis. But unfortunately, very often when we come into other cultures as Christian missionaries too, we often tend to pass by those trees of life and go other ways. Let's talk about initiation among these people. That term, by the way, is not a Gbaya term, initiation. That's a Western term, and they have another way of talking about it. First of all, the word for the initiation in their culture is lapi. L-A, and that's an implosive B-I, lapi. And they call it a Simbo theme. Last week, one of the sessions I spent on purification rituals, and that's about Simbo, which represents, briefly, the sacred. And we could translate it as what is taboo is the violation of what is sacred, or what is inherently inviolable, which is life itself. Initiation, say the Gbaya, is about, it is a thing of life or a thing for life, if they express it in this way. It's for a new way of life. And it's about the ambiguity, about the threat of death, and the celebration of life, which are somehow held together in this lapi, in this initiation. The threat of death, celebrating also the sacredness of life. How do the Baya people speak then about lapi? Well, instead of the word initiate, they will use a word which has four meanings. Very curious are these meanings. The first, well, the term first of all in Baya is be, G-B-E, we could spell it, be. Means, first of all, to kill. To gbe lapi is the term used, and the first meaning of that word is to kill. Or it can mean if somebody is drunk, they will use this term. Agbe dogbe. He is drunk or inebriated. There's a kind of ambiguity in that term too, as expressed also in our term high. Somebody who is high on drugs or on alcohol. There's a certain ambiguity there in the meaning. Be in Baya. Or it can be to measure, to measure a field. Be to be nufo is to measure off the limits of the field. Or it can mean, finally, to undergo an initiation. But these meanings come together in a rich ambiguity here, because on the one hand you have the expression, you could translate literally, to kill lapi, but which would not be an adequate translation of the meaning, which is for life. Another way of expressing what's going on in initiation here is the term yoya, to be a yoya, to kill a dance. Initiations are spoken of in the Gbaya idiom as dance, and to submit or to undergo a dance. Before then I get into a rather detailed description of the lapi, which I will begin today and I will continue tomorrow and complete tomorrow, I'd like to mention that some who have interpreted, anthropologists who have interpreted ritual phenomena, go to the work of a Dutch scholar in the early part of the century. His name was Van Gennep, who distinguished three phases in ritual, in especially initiation ritual, but applicable in other kinds of traditional rites. The first phenomenon involves rites of separation from the normal flow of society. So there are rites of separation, followed by a liminal phase. Liminal meaning threshold, a betwixt and between time. When you're undergoing an initiation, you are in a betwixt and between time. And finally, you are reintegrated again into society. Now, in this betwixt and between time, this threshold time, there are some fascinating community-oriented things which happen. And some of the meanings and some of the values which develop as boys or girls are together in community, in special community during that period, some of those values that I would like to have you exposed to and to think about and to discuss together. Lapi is the most important of a number of initiations among the Gbaya. This one is for adolescent boys. There are other rites for girls, but we'll be speaking about adolescent boys. It was practiced quite regularly among the Gbaya until the 1960s. For the last 20 years, it has not been regularly practiced. You have to go rather far into the bush country to find it. And I have investigated it with a number of older Gbaya men, by older I mean older than I am, who are all initiates, who spent at least 3 years in the initiation rite. Many of these men are leaders in the Lutheran Church today, and they remember the details of this initiation in what I think is a phenomenal way. So impressed upon their memory all the details of what they underwent as initiates in Lapi. Lapi was the Gbaya way for providing a comprehensive education for adolescent boys. A boy who did not participate successfully in Lapi could not become, say the Gbaya, a genuine person. Lapi was a school because the boys received important training. But it was like religion also, because the training received was not only physical and mental, but it was also spiritual. Lapi taught the boys how to live. That's very important. It taught the boys how to live, how to distinguish between right and wrong. Lapi changed the boys from boys into intelligent men. Now, how did Lapi accomplish this change? Gbaya initiates say that the change happens under the water. The fathers of adolescent boys, especially those from age 12 to 15 years, meet with other old initiates at the beginning of the dry season. There are two seasons where we've lived, the dry season lasting about 7 months, and that's the hunting season, and the wet season lasting around 5 months. They meet with each other in order to create a new initiation camp. These men might come from single large villages or from several smaller villages next to each other, and they inform someone they call the Narninga, the one who holds the spear of their intention, so that he will make necessary preparations for the new initiation camp, which, by the way, is held every 7 years. A new camp is begun. Numbers are important for the Gbaya as they are for the people of Israel. Among the Gbaya, the number 3 is a male number, the number 4 is a female number, making 7. The complementarity of male and female adding up to a whole number of 7. This one who holds the spear is the man in charge of the initiation. He represents the laws of Lapi, and everything having to do with Lapi depends on him. He tells some of the former initiates now to go build a dam in a nearby stream in order to create a little pool of water, or a large pool of water, depending on how many initiates will be participating, and that pool should be about 1.5 meters deep. They first of all remove all the obstacles underneath the water, tree stumps and stones and other things which might interfere with what's going to happen underwater. Other initiates in the village prepare the boys for their departure, counseling them, "You're going away to die. You must take leave of your parents and be sure that all is well between you and your parents. You're going to learn how to live as a genuine person. Those who are not initiated into Lapi cannot know anything about life. They are worthless." So the novices must enter initiation completely naked. Their heads are shaved, and all clothing is left behind. They are about to begin a new life, a life separated and altogether different from the life they've known. And they must not bring along anything from their former existence into this experience of Lapi. Excitement mounts now in the village as the old initiates begin to teach the novices a few notions of the initiation dance, which is to be the most demanding and exacting requirement of the entire initiation. The one who holds the spear, prepares his spear, and other ceremonial accoutrements, which include an enormous straw hat and an assortment of ragged clothes, which will serve to disguise and to conceal his identity. Again, there's an ambiguity here, because the one who holds the spear is going to ritually kill the initiates, and yet he appears as a clown. The spear, the hat, the rags will not be readmitted within the village after the rites, because the rites in the pond are about death, and these are instruments of death. And so after the rites, those spears and all his clothes will be taken out to the foot of this sore tree, where they will be cooled. When the pond is ready and the boys' heads have been shaved, the old initiates cover them with white ashes, which is a sign of death. Then they begin to chant. And here's what they chant. Tomorrow these children will be changed. They will no longer be in the village. They will suffer. They will no longer do what they've been doing. They will be real lucky. The leopard has already taken them. The lion has already taken them. This chant is a kind of invocation which signals departure for the pond. They lead the initiates, the novices, on a run toward the pond, followed at a distance by the women and the uninitiated, who must not get too close. The men sing. And they sing because they're proud that their sons will become men, whereas the women wail, fearing the death of their sons. The old initiates sing and they dance to the accompaniment of drums and to xylophones and to harps. And they begin to beat the water furiously with branches, all the while singing. Naraninga, the one who holds the spear, stabs with a poisoned spear. Let Naraninga come. Let us go into the water. Naraninga is hiding among the trees. They set a trap under the water. And there's a refrain that everyone is singing. Are the initiated coming? Is Naraninga coming? Do you see Naraninga coming? The men continue to stir up the water of the pool, working their way toward the dam. Then they return to the far end of the pool, and after the second complete round of this increasingly vigorous activity, as they begin the third round, the novices are carried into the water and they are submerged. The boys are each held by their godfathers. It's a term which doesn't, in their language, look quite like godfather, but we can translate it in that way. They're sponsors. Each boy has a sponsor. And the sponsors hold the novices under water with only their noses above water, but pretending at the same time to drown them under the water. And the godfathers make the round up and down the pool twice, and as they approach the dam for the third time, the one who holds the spear breaks out of hiding and jumps into the water from the dam, hotly pursued by a group of old initiates who are running after him with branches. But he's too quick for them, and he thrashes his way into the pool, and he goes from each novice, from novice to novice, brandishing his spear. As he approaches the novices, the godfathers prepare the place where the spear will supposedly penetrate these boys to kill them. It's on their abdomen. And the Naraninga comes with his spear and thrusts it toward the abdomen of each boy. When he has gone to each boy, Then the godfathers carry the boys up out of the water and place them on the ground near the pool, face down. They then place straw over the boys. Some of the boys, who are known to be of especially rebellious character, will be bound with the straw. If there is straw, there's a symbol of death here. These boys have been ritually killed. And the straw signifies here that they are being made ready for burial. The Gbaya bury their dead in straw mats. Now, this may be the time also when those boys who have been particularly stubborn in the community may be beaten and may be whipped. After they are securely bound up in the straw, the initiates will then carry them off to a place called the House of Blood, still accompanied by the singing of the men and the wailing of the women, the mothers in the background who are fearing the death of their boys. And they sing like this, Bilo, 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 being a wailing, signifying the death of these boys. The children's dance, the children's dance, the Lapi children are crying for food, the children's mothers, the children's mothers, the Lapi children want to dance. They are brought to the House of Blood, which is built in the shape of a womb, or in the shape of a horseshoe. A simple construction of poles and leaves facing away from the village. The shape of a womb facing away from the village. And the novices, still dead in parentheses, are laid out in front of this house. And again, they may be severely beaten if they are known to have had a rather difficult character. Some boys might even undergo a torture by fire. And this is potentially the most dangerous moment for the life of the boys during the entire ritual period. While lying face down in front of the House of Blood, the novices must endure their suffering without murmur, without complaint, for to complain would only add to their sufferings. But now relief comes when the initiates come with a small leaf, which has been sent by the same one, the Narninga, who had brandished the spear under the water. He sends a leaf in which there is medicine. And the old initiates bring this medicine to each one of the boys and put some medicine into the boys' nostrils, at which point they sneeze. And when they sneeze, they come again to life. And all the initiates join in shouting, you might say, to your health, as they come to life, or an expression which means literally, you're saved, you're resurrected from the dead. So the resurrection of the dead has been accomplished. But only the initiated are witnesses of this resurrection, because the uninitiated and the women must believe that the boys are dead. In the eyes of the initiated, the life which follows this event is a new life. It is a life after death. So the novices sing, we died, we died, bring us food. Didn't we die? The Lapi children who died underwater are saved. The Lapi children suffered underwater. Stubborn children cannot become Lapi children. And so they sing over and over again. The novices enter the House of Blood one by one, and several old initiates leave for the village to bring back food for the risen boys. During the relatively brief time now that they will spend in the House of Blood, possibly several weeks, but usually less, they will receive all their food from the village. Now enters another actor in this drama. Not the Narninga, the one who holds the spear, but one who is called Ngandimba, the one of blood, who takes charge of the initiation as the director and the teacher of the boys. He is a respected Lapi initiate who directs the instruction of these newborn children during the entire period of 3 to 4 years that they will spend in the bush, away from their village. The boys are now smeared from head to foot with kaolin and are known for a time as white lapi. The color white indicates, on the one hand, death, and on the other hand, signifies that these boys are separated out from the rest of Baya society. So that if, as they wander in the bush, if anyone sees from afar a boy who is undergoing initiation, that boy is also a Simbo thing. And it is taboo to come into relationship unless you yourself have been initiated with one of these boys still in the initiation process. Now this one of blood counsels the boys, and we're getting into some of the teaching provided during the initiation period. He counsels them in words something like this: beginning today you are Lapi. You are no longer of the village. You know nothing about the village. You died and you rose again. From now on, you must not come into contact whatsoever with women. They must not see you. They must never recognize you, especially pregnant women. If you touch a woman, you will die. Just in parentheses here, what is involved here with the boys coming into contact, especially with pregnant women, is again that they are protecting the gift of life. And as Lapi represents that which is sacred, those who have, they must not encourage any violation of that sacred character which they represent during the period of initiation. So if they come into contact with pregnant women, the children those women carry will die. They say, the teacher says, you must no longer go the same places village people go. You must not lie or steal or quarrel with one another. One thing emphasized is harmony within this community living together in initiation. You must obey and submit yourselves without question to the old initiates. You must not eat eggplant, because if you eat eggplant, you will no longer be able to speak the Lapi language. You're going to be learning a new language now. You must carry wood to the old women and to other incapacitated people in the village. You must carry wood to the one who holds the spear, the Narninga, and to the other old initiates. You must leave wood back of their homes and never be seen by anyone in the village. When you walk along the path, lower your head, and if someone speaks to you in the Gbaya language, you must never respond. Never respond in the Gbaya language. If you speak Baya, you'll be sent back to the village and be full of shame all the rest of your life. Never explain a word about Lapi during your entire life, or you will die, says the Gandiva. Now, there's a fearsome covenant here. When he's finished giving this exhortation, he makes an incision in the abdomen of each boy, about 4 or 5 centimeters in length. And this is the mortal wound which the one who holds the spear is supposed to have inflicted under the water. Now they will actually carry this wound with them. The one of blood takes a raw manioc tuber, or cassava tuber, and he dips it into the bloody incision of the boy and gives it to the boy to eat, saying, "This is your blood. Now that you eat this blood, if you should ever reveal the secrets of Lapi to anyone who is not an initiate, may your own blood kill you. May you die by the knife. May the buffalo kill you with his horns. May the spear run you through. If you reveal the secrets of Lapi, may all that God has made kill you." The Gbaya idiom for expressing what we express as covenant is the term natok, which means to drink blood. I'm not going to take time now to make some links or connections with New Testament materials, but except for this one, as Jesus and as we participate in the Eucharist, we hear these words, "This is the new covenant in my blood." There are some links here that I just mentioned that on the way, and we'll come back to that. This is the solemn, this is the fearful Lapi covenant, which all the initiates are expected to keep during their entire lifetime. The boy must eat the manioc, which has been dipped in his own blood. If he simply licks the blood, it's not a real covenant. Manioc and blood are genuine food, and they must be consumed to seal a genuine covenant. Now, with whom does a novice make this covenant? He makes the covenant with the Narninga, the one who holds the spear, who represents all the laws of Lapi. You can't just make a covenant with yourself. Following this covenant rite, the boys begin to learn the Lapi language. And during this time, their incisions are healing. They spend at least 2 weeks in the house of blood, and the Gbaya language must be completely replaced now with the Lapi language. And they must not utter another word in the Gbaya language during the entire period that they'll spend in the initiation. And during this time, they'll all receive nicknames fashioned after their physical characteristics. One may be called the one with a big stomach, another one with the big eyeballs, or the fat one, or the skinny one, and so on. They'll all receive nicknames during this time and will be addressed as such. But now also the novices begin a serious study. And the most serious study for the boys is to learn dances, the Lapi dances. The boys have a certain hierarchy. There is a kind of president of the boys. There is a kind of sergeant of arms among the boys. There is one who is the most competent in performing dances, and he will lead the others in learning the dances. During this time, they'll make the acquaintance also of another character who comes in called the Serindipa. He is brought into the drama to terrify the boys at night. While they're asleep, he will swing what is called a bull roarer, two pieces of wood, which make a sound kind of like a lion roaring. And as he swings that around at night, he'll be screaming that a lion is coming to devour them all. So they'll all take off for the bush. And later he'll say that, oh, one of the boys has indeed been swallowed by this lion. And in order to get that boy back again, we have to ask the mothers from the village to send out some well-peppered peanut butter, so that the lion can swallow this peanut butter and vomit up the boy he has swallowed. Again, this is all a big joke in their midst in order to get some food from the village, from their mothers. The study of the Lapi language goes on during the entire time that they spend in the bush, and they learn the names of trees, the names of animals, in the Lapi language during that time. Another one comes into the drama at this time. If any of you were present last week when we had Ladies' Day, we spoke about the ritual practice involved with the woman peace thrower. A woman peace thrower comes in now to lead the boys to a new place where they will spend the most of the time while they are in the initiation period, in the actual initiation house, also shaped like a womb, also faced away from the village. And she comes to bless this initiation house. She is also called a sori person because she bears what we could call a peace pot, a pot with cool water, and in the water are sori leaves. And she sprinkles the boys, and she sprinkles this house for blessing and for peace, that no quarreling might go on between the boys while they are there learning what it is to be a mature Gbaya person. As I said, the most serious studying that goes on while they are in the initiation period is the study of dance. Why dance?
the dances are not just a matter of jumping or leaping around. The dances are part pantomime and part drama. They are imitating all the birds and the beasts in the bush. Each dance takes off on the characteristics of another animal or another bird, which they must learn to know in their time in the bush. I'm going to move on from passing over some of the details in this. They are learning to hunt, they are learning to fish, and as I have mentioned now, dance is so significant during this initiation time. The Gbaya idiom to describe what dance is all about is to say bursting forth in dance. And the idiom there is like a flower bursts forth in the morning. Dance is bursting forth and reveals great joy. Now, Lapi dances then reveal all the secrets of the bush. And if there is no dancing in a Gbaya village, that village is simply not healthy, say the Gbaya. Dance says we're all right, we're healthy, we're living in harmony with one another. There's no sickness, there's no hunger in the village if people are dancing. Second in importance after the dance is the hunt. The hunting is not as significant as the dance because one cannot exhibit one's prowess as a hunter among people as effectively as one can exhibit one's competence in the dance. The time spent in the initiation house is a great time if there's plenty to eat, and the novices learn the art of making and setting a variety of animal traps, and also the art of making and setting fish nets and traps. They become expert in the art of avoiding danger, one of the great values coveted by the Gbaya. Evasive and cunning action is more highly valued in the hunt or in fighting than is a straightforward locking of horns. The boys must learn to be highly attentive and discreet. If a boy is excessively timid when entering the Lapi initiation time, he must emerge from that time as courageous. If a boy enters that time as excessively boisterous or rebellious or stubborn, then he must also learn, he must emerge from that time having learned some humility. And how to work with other boys. The boys learn to know and to understand the nature that surrounds them. And they learn the tales and the proverbs and the wisdom of their people as they sit around the fire at night. They learn about the Gbaya taboos and about the omens. And the elders insist that the boys learn self-control. They must learn to cry, to shed tears upon command, and to stop that flow of tears just as quickly when they are asked to do so. And if they do not succeed, they will receive a piece of charcoal to eat with their manioc porridge rather than meat sauce. Charcoal symbolizes, so often for the Gbaya, sins. All oaths are forbidden, with the exception of this one, God is witness. And sorcery is strictly forbidden among the Gbaya during this initiation period. And cursing, to utter a curse, to curse someone, is strictly forbidden. And if someone curses someone else during the initiation, that one will be expelled. Why is sorcery so firmly opposed during initiation? Because the fruit of sorcery is death, and Lapi, this initiation, is for life. They learn to live in harmony. They eat together, and people cannot share a meal. The Gbaya are very, very conscious of who shares a meal together. You cannot share a meal with each other unless there is mutual love and respect. Now finally, I want to tell you the last part of the ritual I'll mention today, and then I want to open up some time for some questions and to look at some of the themes that we've run into thus far. We come now to what the Gbaya call cutting the stick to call the name. As the old initiates assemble in the initiation house, and even now the one who holds the spear is present again. During most of the initiation time, that Narninga, the one who has inflicted the wound under the water, has not been present, but now he comes back. And that signifies that something important is going on. Also, the woman who throws peace is present. And another one is present, a young virgin, one who will be present at the, what we might call, the graduation ceremonies at the end of the ritual, who will click white rocks and anoint the boys at the end of the initiation ritual. At this point now also, this young virgin is present with them, because from here on out, she will actually live with the boys in their initiation house in order to prepare food for them. The cut the stick to call the name right is an examination, and the boys' godfathers are the principal witnesses. A single stick is given to each boy. Now this isn't just any stick, but it's from a sori tree. So we come back again to the importance of the sori tree. Each boy has the stick throughout the rest of the initiation time. On the stick there are 11 notches. And as one looks at the stick, the right side of the stick is the way of life. The middle of the stick is the way of the Narninga, leading to the initiation. The left side of the stick is the way of death, say the Gbaya. Each one of the boys carries this stick when they go hunting or when they wander around in the bush. And if they take a particular path, they may leave this stick on the path to warn all those who are uninitiated, the women or children or uninitiated people, not to take that path, lest they encounter boys who are ritually pure, they themselves being ritually impure. This is a barrier, warning all uninitiated.
Do they leave the stick horizontally or vertical?
They leave it often stuck in the ground by the path.
Vertical,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Stuck into the ground at the side of the path. Mm-hmm. And anyone who comes along who is not himself an initiate in Gbaya must not jump over that stick. Now the rite begins when the one of blood says, "Today the novices will show that they are mature. We'll therefore give them their true Lapi names today." They get their true names. And this is how it proceeds. The Gandimba says, He is their teacher. Lapi, speak. And one by one, the novice comes, and he holds his sore stick, and he says, "I'll tell all." Gandima says, "Speak." The novice responds, "Tell everything." And as he speaks, he indicates now the successive 11 notches on the sore stick. "Tell about Lapi. Look at the people. Look at the man with the spear. Look at Narninga. Only at Narninga." And then he begins to recite these proverbs, and here are the proverbs. There are 11 of them, each one of which has some special meaning for the Gbaya. The first is this: one cannot know Lapi from outside. One can only know Lapi under the water. The meaning of Lapi is the dying and the rising again. You can only know the way of life through this way of death. That's number one. Through this way of death and through this way of suffering. Secondly, the insects join their hands in order to cross the river together. This proverb relates to their own joining together, passing through the threat of death on their way to new life, bridging that river of death to come to new life. The third one. Look at the color of the genet and the color of the partridge, and these colors will show you something about Lati. The color of the genet reminds you about the evils of witchcraft. The colors of the partridge remind you about the life that is in this way of Lati, which leads through the death, way of suffering and death, to new life. Fourth one, the one who drinks his brother's blood drinks what is very bitter. This is a direct reference to witchcraft. The drinking of blood in this case means those who are witches, who in the Gbaya conception drink one another's blood. The fifth one, the virgin girl knows Lati, but she will never breathe a word of it to anyone else, or she will die. The meanings here having to do with keeping secrets in general, but especially the heavy covenant of Lati and the secrets of Lati. We'll come to that in a moment. If someone tries to kill you, you must survive, you must escape. This value of evasive action is counseled here. Seventh, and this is not only very important to the Gbaya, but I think worth reflecting on here as, again, one of these elemental values brought out in this initiation rite. The proverb goes like this: what happens when you show off your strength? You'll find a battle, and ultimately death. Again, this is on the sore stick, this notch is on the sore stick. The sore is communicating all of these values. It is a way of wisdom being imparted to the boys for a new way of life. There are several others here, a couple of them, again, having to do with putting down witchcraft and the dangers, the evils in witchcraft, and extolling this way of life which is in the Lati initiation. When each novice has recited all of these proverbs, then the teacher will say, now this Lati knows what is necessary. And the novice then receives his real initiation name. He is named, and when all have passed the examination, then their success is celebrated by dance and by a festive meal together. Now I'm going to stop for today, since our time is just about up. I'm going to stop at that. Tomorrow I'd like to, but before we split, I would like to give you some time for questions and to ask you some questions about some of the themes that you may have seen or heard in the foregoing.
If these rituals are all so secret, how could you as an outsider be able to see them? Were you initiated?
Okay, I was wondering if perhaps that question would come. No, I was not initiated. Those who have revealed these things to me are today Christians. And I think that makes all the difference in the world. I think what we're looking at here are some treasures for the Gbaya of an old covenant, but an old covenant which has been surpassed by a new covenant, which comes to expression when a Gbaya preacher, when you go to worship on a Sunday morning, may say, Jesus is our sore, cool thing. When a new metaphor is born here, the meanings which have been in sore or in this initiation rite, Lati, have taken on a new content. And so they are freed up in the gospel. All things are brought out from the hidden places by the gospel and are brought out into the full light of day. And Jesus does that. And those who are Christians can reveal what has been a very heavy and fearsome covenant for them, but may tell about it freely, and then free to make some connections. As I mentioned to begin with, called these presentations foreshadowings of the gospel. Any other questions about what I might mean about that whole foreshadowing business, or any other questions?
How many people have went through this initiative so far?
Up until the early 60s, any genuine Baya man went through the Lapya initiation. Then things changed.
But is that one or none that's went through it?
All adolescents in a Baya society, to a certain point in their history, went through that initiation. And if they did not, they would be looked upon as weaklings and sort of ostracized from their society. Am I answering your question? Or am I missing a point?
I'm trying to find out who is the audience that's going to see these people, or who they went through to inform they have went through this organization or initiative.
Well, what I'm relating here are the experiences, especially of several who have related these things to me, but corroborated over a number of years by a number, you know, dozens and dozens of those who have participated. So I'm sharing what these Baya, who are now Christians, have experienced and are today as Christians reflecting back upon. Are there some things about dying underwater and coming to new life here? Which, for example, let me just put it this way, you think when Baya people heard something from Paul in Romans 6, for example, where baptism is described as a dying and a rising to new life, do you think they had some symbols in their own background which gave them, so to speak, some handles for understanding what Paul is talking about to the Romans there? Are there some things foreshadowed in their own rituals which provide actually a symbolic vocabulary for them today to express meanings of the gospel? Those are some of my questions.
Well, through your talk, I can see where you're foreshadowing in so many ways the going through the rituals that they were going through.
Can you think of any specifics?
The Last Supper, The
baptism seems, that kind of symbolism here seems to be most prevalent, doesn't it?
I think that's
and indeed,
more than anything
yeah.
else is what I would think.
And that's why today we can speak of baptism as a Christian initiation. We can use that term. Now, among the Baya, some language like that can make some special sense. Whereas I think, for myself anyway, before being exposed to this kind of material among Baya, I really didn't know much about what initiation process was about. It's not part of this American culture in which we live. Or is it?
Did you find that it was important for the missionary to have this background when he started dealing with Baya?
I think it's crucial that when whether it's among the Baya or in any culture, that we are, at the same time as we are sharing the scriptural message, we are bringing that into conversation with where these people are, and letting then the gospel get re-expressed by means of the symbolic vocabulary immediately available to them. That's, in a big fancy term, might be called the contextualization of the gospel. And that's one thing that interests me very much. Another thing that interests me in this whole process is how images from another culture may also enrich my own understanding and perhaps waken up in me some new dimensions which I may find in the gospel message. I also I also think it's another way of looking at this phenomenon of God not leaving himself without a witness in any, among any culture, among any people. Or as Paul puts it in Romans, the law of God written in people's hearts. It's a way of making some sense to that for me.